This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, the weekend edition of Family Research Council's Washington Watch.
Hello and welcome to the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. I'm your host, David Salkeld, a constitutional conservative, husband, and homeschool dad. A little later in the show, we'll be hearing from Hannah Sherlocker from Campus Reform on students who are embracing socialism. Also, retired Admiral Dean Lee and Representative Jim Banks joined Tony to talk about President Trump's announcement that transgendered individuals would no longer be permitted to serve in the military. But first, healthcare was front and center this week, and it's still not over. The president continues to pressure Senate Republicans to pass a health care repeal and or replace bill, and Maryland Congressman and physician Andy Harris joined Tony on Monday to talk about the fight in Congress.
Dr. Harris, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Good to be with you, Tony.
Well, is the president's description apt, a big fat lie in terms of what they did to pass Obamacare?
Oh, absolutely. No question about it. The president said you can keep your own doctor if you like him. You can keep the plan if you like it. You know, costs will go down. You know, costs skyrocketed. It's no longer affordable. People losing their doctors, the hospitals they want to go to, they can't go to. It's just a huge mess.
So on Friday, late Friday, I got news in Michigan as I was traveling that the parliamentarian making an initial ruling on the Senate language struck the pro-life or said the pro-life language would not pass muster, sending Republicans back to the drawing board to try to craft language. How significant is it that the replace portions are in this that come out in the Senate address the life issue?
Well, some of it, like the Planned Parenthood defunding, this is unbelievable because this is the exact same wording we passed 2 years ago in 2015, and apparently the parliamentarian didn't mind it in 2015. I guess now that the president can actually sign it, the parliamentarian has changed her mind. I don't understand that. I'm going to try to figure out what's going on over there. With regards to some of the other pro-life protections, there might be some ways to get around the parliamentarian's ruling. But honestly, this parliamentarian, again, ruling on the Planned Parenthood defunding opposite to the way it was 2 years ago means it might be just time to change the parliamentarian.
You know, that does raise very significant and substantial questions about how this measure was able to get through 2 years ago, 18 months ago, and now the parliamentarian says, no, it's beyond the boundaries of the reconciliation provision. So clearly something is afoot here, but this isn't the final word.
No, it isn't, because in the end, the parliamentarian serves at the pleasure of the Senate, and I think that the parliamentarian had given us some assurances in the House as we passed the bill that that these provisions were, in fact, probably consistent with the Byrd Rule, and now to have decided the opposite means something's going on. I don't understand what it is, but in the end, the parliamentarian only advises the Senate. The Senate makes its own decisions, and perhaps it's time just to get a different advisor.
Now, let's talk, Dr. Harris, now about the political aspects of moving forward with the Obamacare repeal. Tomorrow morning, Senator McConnell, the majority leader in the Senate, has said he's going forward with a motion to proceed. And to explain that to our listeners, that means they vote so they can vote. They vote to move on to debate of a bill. What does it look like from a political perspective, just the Republicans, 52 Republicans? How many do we have so far to move forward?
Well, unfortunately, I think Senator McCain is definitely not going to be there tomorrow. So that was one vote that probably would have voted to move forward. But it looks like it may not succeed tomorrow. Even a motion to move on to debate, which is pretty stunning to me, because the Senate is supposed to be a debating chamber, and to not even take up the issue, an issue that has affected so many lives in America adversely, it's just unconscionable for the Senate not to take this up.
But Dr. Harris, doesn't that concern you if after 7 years of this being a major issue in the Republicans gaining control first of the House, then the Senate, now the White House, if given the opportunity at this point to move forward in repealing Obamacare and Republicans do not do that, How long do you think the American people who have been supporting them will stand for that?
Well, I think that, again, you know, in the House, we realized that we had made the promise. We went ahead and did it. The president has made the promise. I hope that the senators, before the next election, decide that they too made that promise to repeal and replace Obamacare, and I hope they do it. There's still time, but you know, as you drag on, it becomes tiresome now. The fact of the matter is we have other things to talk about, infrastructure repair. We have to talk about tax reform, obviously. We have to deal with immigration as well, and to get bogged down on health care, which should be easy because we've run on this for 6 years now to repeal and replace Obamacare. So I hope the senators get their act together.
Well, I think it's absolutely critical, and I know that you and the conservative members of the House will make sure it gets done over there. I do want to ask you one final question. I thank you for joining us this afternoon. The pro-life provisions, if, perchance, the parliamentarian's ruling stands, this language is replaced and it's not protective of that barrier, that firewall between taxpayers and direct abortion funding, does that create problems for the passage of this bill in the House when it comes back from the Senate?
I think it does, but the Speaker has assured us that there are ways to write. It's convoluted, it's complicated, but there are ways it can be rewritten to protect these Hyde Amendment type provisions so that no public funding goes to pay for abortions. I think there are ways to do it. And again, the Speaker's assured us there are, because honestly, if it comes back without those protections, there are many of us who are just not going to vote for public funding for abortions. This is one of the things that almost sank the Obamacare bill, if you remember the negotiations with Mr. Stupak, and led to the defeat of a lot of the pro-life Democrats who didn't stand up. And I think this would be a mistake to send it back without that kind of wording.
All right, Dr. Andy Harris, thanks so much for joining us on this Monday afternoon.
Thank you, Tony.
You can find out more about Representative Harris when you visit tonyperkins.com. While you're there, why don't you consider a gift to Family Research Council as they continue to fight for your values in Washington, D.C. and around the country. Again, that's tonyperkins.com. Don't go away. We'll be right back with the latest on college students' views on socialism.
The Center for Medical Progress continues to release shocking videos that expose the lies and crimes of Planned Parenthood. Come to Values Voter Summit to hear from David DeLeiden, the heroic undercover journalist behind the Planned Parenthood videos, as he discusses his journey and the courage it takes to stand up for the unborn. Other invited and confirmed speakers include President Donald Trump, Vice President Mike Pence, Michelle Bachmann, Franklin Graham, Dana Loesch, and many more. Register now at valuesvotersummit.org or call 1-877-372-2808.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, David Salkeld. Campus Reform, which is a group based in Washington, D.C., is reporting how college students in our nation's capital are often embracing socialist views. On Tuesday of this week, Hannah Sherlocker from Campus Reform joined Tony to talk about their Man on the Street interviews.
Campus Reform is reporting a number of college students speak positively about socialism. In a number of man-on-the-street-style interviews, where they walk up and ask somebody a question on a college campus and they respond, a number of students express socialism would be good for America. In fact, here's a clip of some of the interviews that they conducted.
In your opinion, is socialism a good thing or a bad thing?
I mean, I think people kind of throw that word around to try to scare you. But if helping people is socialism, then I'm for it.
It could really benefit our country in the future.
I think it's a good idea.
Socialism as a concept, as a philosophy, is good. I think that it's got a bad rep.
Trying to spread the wealth is definitely a good thing in America, and it's definitely a thing that's needed.
There's a lot of things with social welfare that I think would be good to have.
Do you have a positive reaction to socialism or a negative one?
I'd say a more positive one. I'm definitely more open to it.
But we should have a standard of living for all people. Okay. Just by default, that should just be available.
If we did it democratically, then we could really incorporate socialism.
Well, joining us now is Hannah Sherlocker. She is the program coordinator for Campus Reform. Hannah, thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So is this real, or is this a comedy clip you guys have put together?
I wish it wasn't real. You know, going back and watching that video, all jokes aside, this video should be deeply concerning. I mean, 53% of my generation views socialism favorably, and arguably that's because most don't really know what it means, and clearly in this video, it's evident that most millennials do not know what it means, and it's concerning because millennials are now the largest voting bloc in America. They're going to be heading to the polls without really knowing the issues, really knowing what socialism is.
Why is it that they do not know what socialism is? I mean, you know, Bernie Sanders attracted a lot of millennials. Is that because they have no understanding of socialism, that it is a path toward communism?
Right. Arguably, it's because they are misinformed. They're not taught what true socialism is. And they're indoctrinated by their professors who teach them that socialism is great, that it's all about equality for everyone and social justice for all. You know, the professors are doing nothing to teach the horrors brought about by socialism throughout history. And also, schools are no longer teaching basic economics in class. These economic classes are replaced with diversity trainings and social justice courses. You know, just last week, we reported on a Texas A&M receiving $3.5 million in a federal grant to advance diversity on campus. And then recently Wayne State University, they dropped their only required math class and considered replacing it with a diversity course. And then, not to mention, we had 8 years of President Obama making the idea of spreading the wealth some sort of mainstream concept. So it's not really a surprise that these students are misinformed. They sit in their indoctrination dens, and this is what they're taught.
So, Hannah, is there any hope of the truth breaking through to millennials?
You know, I would say, working with the correspondents that I work with at Leadership Institute's Campus Reform, I do see a little glimpse of hope. You know, they're brave enough to stand up in their classrooms, or what I like to call indoctrination dens, and stand up for these American values. You know, classrooms should be a place where students are encouraged to be entrepreneurial, self-starters, and the students that I work with, they recognize that, and they are brave enough to report on what's going on their campus and the bias that their professors portray in the classroom. So I would say there is a glimpse of hope, but, you know, when I was filming with Cabot, one thing he was saying is these students should take a trip to Venezuela or Cuba during their next spring break to see how socialism really is. So I think, you know, talk about hope, we need to get those students, we need to really open their eyes to what true socialism really is.
So, Hannah, in your opinion, what's the best way for parents and for those that, you know, they see their young teenagers and others, college students, trending on this track where they think, well, socialism is not such a bad idea. Everybody's taken care of. What's the best way to reach them?
You know, I'm all about the most effective way is to get them to do their own research. Unfortunately, you know, people are becoming more lazy. They're not doing their own research. But like I said before, all it would take is a trip to one of these countries. You know, most of the students we interviewed, they were pointing to the Nordic countries as, you know, right, ideal, you know, places where socialism worked out. But, you know, I lived in Europe last year and saw firsthand that these countries are not truly socialist. And there's a level of dishonesty from the professors and people who are portraying this. You know, a couple years ago, the Danish prime minister said at a Harvard speech that Denmark is far from a socialist economy. It's a market economy. And, you know, last year, Denmark was actually ahead of the U.S. in economic freedom rankings. So there's a misconception. These students are being fed lies. So most importantly, I think these students need to do their own research. You know, Sweden for years has been slowly eliminating welfare state policies. They've been cutting taxes, and it's clear that these countries are not models for successful democratic socialism, but the narrative given by Sanders and Obama and professors are convincing a great deal of people that socialism is something it's not. So people really need to open a textbook to do some research and really find out for themselves, because unfortunately the classroom has become a place where we can't always trust the professors to give truth when we're replacing basic economic classes with diversity classes. I mean, how are these students supposed to get true, honest, historical facts, you know?
Well, it sounds like we need a few road trips, maybe to Venezuela, to China. Send them to Venezuela where they're rioting because they can't get toilet paper. So that sounds like maybe a good field trip. Hannah, thanks so much for joining us. Very interesting, alarming, but I believe there's a lot of young people out there that get it. We just need to empower them to speak even louder. So, Hannah, thanks so much for joining us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
You can find out more about campus reform when you visit tonyperkins.com. Also, a quick reminder that your generous contributions to Family Research Council enable us to continue making these programs available, helping you stay informed on the issues that matter to you. You can donate when you visit tonyperkins.com. When we come back, a look at President Trump's decision to reverse one of former President Obama's last-minute policy changes.
Hundreds of religious liberty violations have occurred in the United States in recent years, and FRC is at the forefront of the movement to preserve, protect, and defend religious liberty. In a newly updated publication, we catalog the growing threat to religious liberty with a comprehensive report of documented accounts of religious liberty violations that have occurred in the last 17 years. Go to frc.org/hostility for this exclusive publication.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. On Wednesday, President Trump announced via his Twitter account that, quote, "After consultation with my generals and military experts, please be advised that the United States government will not accept or allow transgender individuals to serve in any capacity in the U.S. military. Our military must be focused on decisive and overwhelming victory and cannot be burdened with the tremendous medical costs and disruption that transgender in the military would entail." End quote. Former Admiral Dean Lee, Congressman Jim Banks, and Tony offer their own assessment of this development. First up is Admiral Lee.
Admiral Lee, welcome to Washington Watch.
Well, thank you, Tony. I appreciate the opportunity.
Your reaction to the president's announcement this morning?
Well, I was actually underway fishing this morning when I got within radio range. I happened to turn on the radio when I heard the announcement over NPR. And it kind of rocked me back because I thought that train had left the station and that there was no turning back on this. I was very, very pleased with the president's bold and decisive decision on this one, supported by Secretary Mattis.
There have been a number of military leaders, both active and retired, that have expressed concern over the amount of time that has been spent over in training over the social policies that the military has been forced to embrace, which has just been a distraction from the military's mission. Do you agree with that concern?
Oh, yes, sir. Absolutely, I do. When this policy, when the draft policy first came out last year, I was still on active duty, and I read the first iteration of the policy on a plane trip out to the West Coast, and by the time I landed, I had marked this thing up, and it was fraught with questions and concerns. And I was never able to get those questions, those concerns, adequately addressed before I retired in October, and I am glad to see that other members, other senior retired service members have joined the ranks with the active duty members still in command who can't openly talk about it, but glad to be part of the team that could get this agenda, the conservative agenda for the military service members, in front of the president, and glad to see he could make a decision on it. And I was surprised at how quickly it came about.
Well, it was encouraging, but this president is a man of action and is decisive when the information gets in front of him. Admiral, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. Appreciate you sharing your thoughts on this, and I hope the fishing trip went well.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
That was Admiral Dean Lee. Here now is Tony with some thoughts, followed by an interview with Congressman Jim Banks.
The rule committee meeting moving toward a debate and vote on Make America Secure Appropriations Act. We've been talking about this for the last week and a half. I've been encouraging you to call your members of Congress and asking them to oppose this. This is the one that contains about $80 billion in new spending for the Department of Defense. It includes defense appropriations, military construction, veteran affairs, the legislative branch, energy and water development for the fiscal year 2018. Now, the reason we opposed it is because of this transgender funding in the military was moving toward, with gender reassignment surgeries being included, hormone treatments estimated to be anywhere from $1.5 to $3.7 billion over a 10-year period. Not something we should be spending money on. So this measure was in trouble because conservatives were opposing it because of your phone calls. This brought the issue before the president. The president said, well, why are we doing this? Why are we having trouble? And people said, well, this is the reason, Mr. President, because the military is looking at doing this. And he said, why is that happening? And knowing that he's got a lot of things on his plate, it's what is the most pressing that gets before the president. And the president then spoke to his military leader, said this does not help us from a standpoint of military readiness and effectiveness. So the president said, well let's just stop it. And so that's what the president did this morning. This is the first time that I can recall, even going back to Ronald Reagan, who was a really good president, where a Republican coming in behind a liberal Democrat that advanced these social programs, radical social programs that were harmful, in this case to the military, that they were actually reversed. Now, historically, what they would do, they might stop it, but they would never reverse it on any policy, whether that's the military, anywhere in government. And again, I'm struggling to find another example of this. So this is very significant. That the president, in a decisive manner, said, shouldn't be doing this. It's bad. And we're not going to do it anymore. So, folks, I want to commend you for the very strategic role that you played in this by responding to our calls to action. And that brought this before the president. The president acted, and now it's no longer a problem. All right, joining me now is Congressman Jim Banks of Indiana. He represents the 3rd Congressional District. He serves on the House Armed Services Committee. And Jim, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony, it's great to be with you again.
Your reaction to the president's announcement this morning that he's reversing the transgender policy that Obama put in place as it pertains to our military.
Hey, Tony, this is a common sense announcement by this administration once again, and all that the president is doing in this announcement is rolling back policy to what it was just 2 years ago. It was 2 years ago that President Obama decided yet again on another issue to impose a social issue test on the United States military inappropriately related to this transgender issue. So I believe this is a important step to sideline this issue so we can focus on what matters most, and that's getting our military back on its feet and addressing the readiness crisis in the military today so that we can confront the very serious threats that we face around the world.
Let's talk about the bigger issue here. I mean, this is a sea change. I know you also, in addition to being in Congress, you are a member of the Naval Reserve. You've served in our nation's military. And continue to serve. I mean, this shows a paradigm shift in many ways from what the military has been operating under for the last 8 years.
Yeah, that's right, Tony. I have a unique perspective. In recent years, as a reservist, we're often forced and required to go through training, mandatory training related to issues like welcoming transgender troops into the military. So, Secretary Mattis also said something yesterday about eliminating a number of these types of training that get in the way of our troops, especially reservists and others who only show up one weekend a month to learn and train, to eliminate a lot of these burdensome training courses, especially the ones that are related to the social experiments that were brought about during the 8 years of the Obama administration. So, you're right, the president's announcement and change of policy related to transgender troops in the military is indicative of a significant change, not just in the White House, but also at the DOD, that I think will be welcomed by a vast majority of our troops.
Well, Congressman, before I let you go, I also want to, you may have heard this before as you were coming on, I was talking with our listeners. There has been a lot of opposition expressed to the additional funding for the military through the Make America Secure Appropriations Act because of this issue and the Department of Defense moving forward with potentially doing the gender reassignment surgery. So what, and I know there were a number of conservatives that were opposed to voting for that bill for that reason, that opposition now removed. The folks that have expressed concern over this policy have helped make a difference on this, have they not?
There's no question. And once again, Family Research Council led the way in exposing that issue related to the bill that we're going to vote on sometime today or very early in the morning, late tonight, related to funding the military, that previously that funding would have gone potentially toward surgeries for transgender troops. The American taxpayer should never be on the hook to fund those types of surgeries. In fact, that money, to the tune of over $1 billion, should go toward restoring and rebuilding our military at a time when we desperately needed to do just that. So, a big change, a welcome change today. We have a lot more work to do. But this is one big step in eliminating a number of distractions that get in the way of the readiness of our troops to go and do what they have to do when they fight to defend our country.
Well, Congressman, our hats off to you and other members of the Freedom Caucus that have stood firm on these issues and helped to bring them out today's positive resolution. Jim, thanks so much for joining us today.
Have a good day.
If you want to find out more about Congressman Banks, just head on over to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links. Also, while you're there, sign up for Tony's Washington Update. It's a daily email highlighting the important issues affecting your faith, family, and freedom. And if you find the weekend edition of Washington Watch informative and useful, we'd encourage you to tell your friends about Washington Watch. You can help us reach more people with this radio ministry by supporting our efforts and heading over to TonyPerkins.com and clicking on the donate button. Well, that's it for this week's show. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us, and I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
The weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you've heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can help support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 866-372-7234.